I remember when my daughter was really small. By age 2, she had quite the temper. If I picked out a dress for her to wear, guess what she did? Threw a temper tantrum, right? If I gave her some food that she didn't like, guess what she did? Threw a temper tantrum. And you know when the worst time was? When I had to take her to bed. Because when I took her to bed, guess what she did? You got the idea. Threw a temper tantrum. Well, eventually she would cry herself out, and then I would sneak into her room so quietly and cover her with a blanket and kiss her goodnight. And when I think of that scene, it reminds me of how God's love and mercy covers us, even when we don't deserve it. You know, one of the reasons I really like this story of what we call the prodigal son, I don't think it was really called that back in those days, right? It's because it's kind of immoral for the people that would be listening to it that day. I mean, they would have been shocked. You got to think about it. He's talking to this first century audience, you know. We have a son return home, right? Does it really have anything to do with loving and missing his family? No. Why is he coming back? He's starving to death, right? All right, dying of hunger. His father forgives him. Even before he gets there, goes running out and doesn't have to say a word of repentance. He's already accepted, right? And the older brother, we always make him the villain, don't we? Always make him the villain. But the fact of the matter is, his little brother has come back to mooch off of what's left of this poor guy's fortune, you know? Share what's left out of the wealth. I think I've been mad too. Well, the story, I think, is designed so it makes us want to choose sides. Anybody out there choose a side when you're hearing this story? Nobody, right? Okay, I volunteer as me. It's asking us, at first, we think, to make judgments about who's right and who's wrong, yet I think if we can resist that temptation to make a decision on who's right or who's wrong, if we can not stereotype people, because isn't that what we start doing immediately? Oh yeah, he's like this, she's like this. Don't we start stereotyping? Then we might learn something from this lesson, because it's about a fun-loving guy, right, that's gone off and learned his lesson versus the older brother who's never taken a risk. That's how we stereotype it, right? Then we can recognize that we actually need both. Because what we have is two sides of the gospel in this story. They're kind of mirror images of each other. Have you ever noticed that? And as long as the two remain estranged, they can't live holy lives. The younger brother lives entirely by grace, right? Having disobeyed his father, emptying his bank accounts, almost starved to death, he has weighed all these options, and he decides it's better to have food, right? So he goes back home. He begs his father to take him back. And as we know, then his father comes running at him. Now, you have to know that this father going running at him and encircling him with love, the community would have been really upset about that. And you know why? Because he would have been ostracized from the community when he did that. And it was the father's job to uphold the laws, the respect, but he doesn't do this. And so when the father goes running to him in the community, it's dishonoring the father. It's not what the father's supposed to do, right? In this case, I think the father is showing us what forgiveness really does look like and how much it costs if we really do forgive, you know? Can we tell the son, can we tell the father that they're wrong to do this? Can any of us do that? Meanwhile, we've got the older brother, who we ignorantly call the villain, right? How's he lived his life? Entirely on what? Obedience, right? He is the obedient son. We have a theological word for that. It's called righteousness, isn't it? The older brother devoted his whole life to the father, right? He's been the best follower of the father he could possibly be. He's the most right son. Never left his father's side, worked every day in his life, never gone against his father's wishes. He's been loyal. He's been respectful. He's been hardworking. I could almost repeat the American ideals, couldn't I? Isn't that? How many of you were loyal, hardworking, and respectful? Weren't we taught? We kind of raised that way, weren't we? Right? Is there anybody here that could tell him he's wrong for living his life that way? Unfortunately, the way this parable is usually handled, we usually think the father does tell his son that he's wrong. But does he? Does he in this parable say to the older son that he's wrong? No. He only has love for this older son as well in the face of the brother's remorse, right? So he says to him, let's go order the servants. Let's go get a robe. Let's go get a ring. Let's do the fat calf, right? And in the face of the older brother's despair, he says, son, you're always with me. Everything I have is yours. Sounds like love to me. The man refuses to decide between his children in this story, right? All his energy is really focused on what? Getting the two back together, because each one needs something that the other person needs. If the youngest son is going to survive, he badly needs his older brother's what? Discipline. He needs to have some discipline in his life. He needs to have his devotion to his father and his mother and his community, right? But yet, if the older brother is going to survive, what does he need? He badly needs to acknowledge, like the younger son did, his brokenness and his humility. So there's no heroes here. There's no villains here. Just two brothers that are mirrored images of each other, and all their lives they define themselves by their differences. Anybody here of brothers and sisters? Yeah, huh? Well, so did you ever say, I'm the good one? Right? Oh, you're the scaredy cat. You won't ever take any risks, right? I'm the fun-loving one, right? You're just an old fuddy-duddy, right? Defined each other this way as total opposites. And like any family system, up until this point, they've made allowances. I did this for you. To make the family system balance, right? But now, evidently, the father says, uh-uh. This isn't the way the family system's going to work anymore, he says. He says, I'm going to tip the balance a little bit in favor of my younger son, the sinner, not because the boy's any better, not any better than his older brother, but simply because the younger son has come home. We have to celebrate and rejoice, he says, you know, because that brother of yours was dead and now he's alive. He was lost and now he found, he says. And that puts the burden of the happy ending on who? The older brother, right? Because remember, how many people even invited him to the party? How did he find out about it? Nobody invited him to the party. He's out working his, you know what, off all day long, hard as he could. He comes in, he's dirty, he's tired, he knows nothing about it. And then all of a sudden, what does he hear? Music and dancing. I might be a little angry. I don't know about you. But then I figured out a long time ago, I'm an older brother, you know? This story really isn't about either one of them. It's about a family reunion, you know? If only the brother would be willing to come into the house. But of course, in order to do that, you know, he's going to have to make this horrible choice, and some of you may have had to do that in your lives before. He's going to have to choose between being right and being in relationship. Which, as you know, if you've ever tried it, that can be really gut-wrenching to make, you know? Do you dismiss your own airtight case and you know you're right and you go inside anyway just so you have somebody to eat Thanksgiving dinner with next week and next year? Anybody ever done that? Or somebody to go celebrate Christmas with, right? Or keep your marriage together? Or do you stay outside and where you at least have your pride? And your priorities are in order, right? While everybody else, though, is hugging and kissing and saying, how are you? I don't know if you've ever noticed, but there's something about having only two choices that kind of just paralyze you. And that's why I like this story, because God is breaking in and he's given us a third choice, isn't he? A third choice, this gift from God to this eldest son. He says the older brother's third choice, I think, is to redefine righteousness for himself. It's to abandon his type of righteousness, of being right all the time, of having, knowing every one of his beliefs is right, is always taking this higher level of righteousness over relationships, and facing the consequences of the behavior of both sons. Because that's exactly what the father does. He says the father lovingly embraces this wrongdoing son as he embraces us when we wrongdo. The father welcomes a sinner into his home, a sinner into his church. You know, the father blankets both sons, doesn't he? With love and with compassion. Come on in, the father says to his son. Come on, stand here on my side, side on the side of welcoming your brother. Unfortunately, a lot of us churchgoers don't always want to do that, do we? We're so afraid of letting people off the hook that we deem have sinned. We're kind of resentful of unearned love, aren't we? They don't deserve that. Unless we just happen to be the one that God is blanketing with his love. Unless we just happen to be the one to whom the Father is running with his arms held out in mercy.